This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Well, good afternoon, Rutherford County. I've got somebody over here making wishes that will never come true. But we want to let you know that part of this show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shevable, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 15-20 minute drive down 231 South. It's on your left before you get into downtown Shevable. And probably best if you pull them up on PirtleHowerton.com before you leave, or just give them a call at 1-800-264-6800, and so they can be ready for you. And just go in, just spend the time with them, enjoy the fellowship. There's just really, really nice people. And I guarantee you, if you're looking for a vehicle right now, that's the place to go, and you'll be glad you did. We're going to have a really unique show on today, something very special. And I have one of my favorite movies of all times is an old Robert Mitchum film called Thunder Road. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about moonshining in Middle Tennessee, but primarily in what I call the moonshine capital of the world at one time, was Short Mountain in Cannon County. And I have John Whittemore on. And Jim, I know that your family is also into it too, and talking about Jim Simpson. And we're going to talk about the history of it as it has evolved and where the future of it might be heading into. So, John...
Yes, sir.
Glad to have you on today.
Glad to be here with you
and
today.
And Jim, I'm glad to have you on also.
It's a pleasure.
Kind of give me a little history of what you know about moonshining and your family. And I know that I have always thought that maybe moonshine's start probably came from either Scotland or Ireland or somewhere. And then as the settlers came in, that was just part of their heritage.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, it was. I'm from the Cannon County area. My family goes back four generations. Mm-hmm. It was my great-grandfather who was the first of the Parkers to come through. Jimmy here is my cousin. My great-grandfather's brother.
Family business.
That's right. That's right. My great-grandfather and his grandfather were brothers. Mm-hmm. And they came in from North Carolina and settled a little small spot here around, oh, I guess the early 1900s, maybe a little before that. Mm-hmm. And back in those days when the pioneers came through, the early settlers came through, they were pretty limited in ways to make a living.
Right.
You could only do so much with the farm. Mm-hmm. But most of them, as you mentioned, were of Scots-Irish descendants, and they had some knowledge of that from their ancestors. So they had the ultimate added value product, and they could grow their grains and their orchards and that sort of thing on the farm, and it was a way for them to make a little cash and to support their families.
Now, when it first got started, I guess before they came over here, was moonshine just a way to make the liquor for personal use, or was it something that was still a business, say when it was in Scotland and Ireland? What was it originally meant to be a business?
Well, I think it was along the same lines as how it sort of evolved here. Mm-hmm. It started as personal use and kind of grew because people could see that there was a way of making a pretty good living off of it, making pretty good money. So you started having bigger distilleries pop up in the area, and so it kind of grew into that, much as it did here.
When it first got started, I presume that when it became a business, and I'll ask you this, Jim, was it illegal when they first started? Because the thing that makes it illegal, of course, is the evasion of taxes, supposedly, that you're not paying for the what you're selling and giving it a portion of it back to the government. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's, to my knowledge, when it first started, it wasn't illegal. You could do whatever you wanted
right.
to with it. And then when the government found out how many people were doing it and how much tax money that they were losing on it, then they made it illegal. Then you had to go through them to get your permits and everything so you could pay the taxes on it.
Was it possible to get a permit to sell moonshine back then? Because it seems like that unless you had a large distillery or something like that, it was something that the government pretty much had a heavy hand on.
Well, it wasn't too bad for a long time because used to you couldn't buy vinegar and you couldn't buy municipal alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of a way of life. But the government still wanted to regulate that. And then I guess when all the bootleggers and everybody popped up, then they saw how much tax money they were losing, then they wanted to start taxation on both ends. So my understanding is it was not illegal to have it, but you had to get a permit or whatever from the government to make it.
Do you guys remember what year that the government started to take charge and started to put the pressure on the moonshiners?
Are you talking about here in the United States?
Yeah, right here.
Well, if my understanding is correct, it was shortly after the Revolutionary War. And just about every farmer, certainly every big farm, had a distillery. George Washington had one of the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And as a way of making money to help pay for what they had spent on the war and to get the new government up and running, they went back to a lot of those farmers and said, well, now instead of whatever the percentage was, we're going to double that. So if you can still afford to pay that and still make, then you're good to go. But if you can't, then you're going to be run out of business. And that kind of eliminated the small guys because they really couldn't afford to pay that much. It was taking too much of their profit. But some of the larger ones were able to do it and to stay in business.
Now, when we're talking about ingredients for moonshine, of course, everybody knows about the corn part of it. But what all is involved and what do you have to grow yourself to make sure that you have all the ingredients that goes into making moonshine?
Well, corn, of course.
Right.
And sugar,
uh-huh,
and water are the three main ingredients that you put into it. And then some people use barley, some people use rice, some people use wheat. And they use that for what they call the cap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little lighter grain. And when it starts to ferment, that comes to the top. And that seals it off, and that keeps everything fermenting under it.
Okay, what did they use as their equipment back then to actually make the moonshine? As far as the burners and the pipes and the barrels, how did they do that?
Well, they had the wooden barrels. Of course, that's what they soured their mash off, mm-hmm, in. As far as I know, it's been copper forever. Of course, you know the what they call the black potters that they use galvanized and old 55-gallon drums and stuff, but it didn't take very long to weed them guys out.
Well, actually, they weed themselves.
That's
out,
right.
Because
that's
after
right.
People went blind and death and everything else, they
that's
had
right.
to. And in fact, I can remember the days that they would actually use radiators, which was one of the worst things in the world that they could.
That's
they could
where all
use.
The lead poisoning came from.
And I think that's one of the things that kind of gave moonshine a bad name initially, is that you had a lot of renegade moonshiners that were running around and giving everybody else a bad name.
Well, everybody was misinformed about the radiators. They knew they were made out of copper, mm-hmm, but they never put it together that they were sorted together with lead sorter. And that's where the lead poisoning came from, and it was almost a whole generation before they ever figured out what was going on.
Wait, did you guys ever see the movie Thunder Road?
I have, yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an amazing thing. Is it anywhere close to being accurate as far as how moonshine is not?
No, that's all Hollywood.
Isn't that the way
like
it always
the Beverly
is?
Beverly Hillbillies, the yeah. one you see on that's not too accurate yeah. either.
Well, now, Truman, I was going to let you know, too, you know, moonshine is generally a term that's used for an illegal alcohol, illicit okay. alcohol that's produced, and it can be in a variety of forms. But during the days that you're talking about, early 1800s, late 1700s, there were also a lot of orchards mm-hmm. that folks used to make brandies. Mm-hmm. And George Washington, if I'm not mistaken, made rum products from the sugar cane and things like that he could grow. So there was a variety of different types of products. Cannon County, I guess there were as many as 20 to 25 pretty big distilleries. Is that right, Jimmy, as
yeah.
far as the number?
Uh-huh.
There were quite a few legal distilleries before Prohibition in Cannon County, and there were orchards all over those hills up there. But after Prohibition, kind of became pointless to have the orchards. Of course, in Tennessee, you can't grow the best of fruit, not for selling, you know, in the produce market, but you could grow enough raw fruit to be able to make a pretty good batch of brandy up.
Did Prohibition affect what we call moonshine around here as far as the growth of it, or did it flourish during that time?
It flourished.
Absolutely, it, yes. It
flourished. We can't document this, but the tale is that Al Capone used to come to Short Mountain and buy his whiskey and take it back to Chicago. So, yeah, I think it had a upswing to it during the Depression.
Now, moonshine, what we're talking about, the pure moonshine, there's really not a real aging process on that, is there?
There isn't at all.
So what you get directly out of the vat, it can be used immediately.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But some of the others, I mean, we're talking about bourbon and some of the other liquors that are distilled, they go through an aging process, and it's quite lengthy at times.
Absolutely. That has more to do with the rules about what you can call a bourbon or what you can call a Tennessee whiskey. There's certain aging requirements, the charred barrel that it has to be kept in during that aging process. But all of it starts off the same as what we're calling moonshine or white whiskey. It all comes off that way to begin with. It's what you do with it after that that makes the difference.
Was there any particular reason that Short Mountain was the hub of moonshine in this area? It almost had to be something.
The water.
Uh-huh.
The mineral-free water.
And they call it, what was it, Cannon County Spring Water or Short Mountain Spring Water at one time. I remember, well, that's what we used to call it when we were young here.
Yeah, and you know, the terrain, I think, had a lot to do with it as well. Certainly you needed the water, but you also had you know, places that you could get that were back out of the way to be able
good
to do it without
spots.
being afraid of getting caught. Yes, sir. And the farmland was, you know, for the most part, good enough to grow the kind of corn and the grains that you needed to be able to get it out there.
Well, I was fortunate enough to take the tour with
yes, sir.
You, John and Jim, and rode in the wagon with the two red mules. I mean, behind the two red mules. And that was really fun. I enjoyed that. And you got a couple of the best mules I've ever seen, Jim.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And the hospitality was so great. And while we were riding through those hollows over there at Short Mountain, I was envisioning all the steels that would be up in there. And where would you hide them? And where was the best place to put them? And so water is definitely a key, but at that time when it was basically you didn't want people to know where you were putting these stills, how were you able to manage the locations and everything like that?
Sometimes you
have to
get
John's
pretty remote.
Part of the gym.
He knows a lot more about that than I.
You had to get pretty remote sometimes.
Right.
And sometimes there's a lot of bluffs up in there.
Yeah.
Rock overhangs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they could get on those rock overhangs and things, and then they could put brush and stuff up in front of it and kind of camouflage it. And there's several different ways. You could get on a real steep bank and dig a hole back into the bank and cover that over with trees and stuff.
You had to be really clandestine about it because you wanted as few people to know about what you were doing, because if the word got out, then the revenuers, of course, would come in and tear your place up. And that is true to life. I remember those things actually happening. So how did you keep your close-knit associations during that time?
Don't say nothing to nobody.
But you had to sell it.
Well, it's you're kind of an underground network.
Uh-huh.
You would hear about this guy over here, and then you'd go talk to him. He said, well, I can use 20 gallon a week, or, you know, I can use 10 gallon a week or whatever. And
uh-huh.
He said, well, I'm buying 5 gallon. I need 5 more gallon per week. So, okay, well, I'll furnish you 5 gallon. You just kind of get your foot in the door that way. And if you make good product, it's like anything else that you make that's good, people will come asking for it.
Most people were family around those areas too. You know, I tell Jimmy joking around a lot, I meet a new cousin every time I go up in the Hollow Springs area that I never knew I had, but you were related in some way or another to most of them.
So it's just like a lot of areas were back then, that the close-knit group of the community was pretty much that way. And if you had somebody new come in, you want to know everything about them before you accepted them, right?
That's true, yes.
And that goes back to the old Irish way. I mean, when you went into a certain community in Ireland, you better give your whole resume to them, or they're not going to care too much about you. They're suspicious, and you guys had to be suspicious of anybody come in that could possibly be a somebody working for a revenue or something like that.
If somebody new came in, nobody had anything to do with them in that sense for a long time. They had to really get to know who they were and what they were about.
And did you have lookouts where you would place them in the areas where the moonshiners and shiners were? And if a revenue got wind of it and came up there, did you have a way to break all that down before they actually got in, or was it just you knew it was going to be lost once they happened there?
Well, most of the time, you know, at that time there wasn't a whole lot of cars around, you know, different cars, and everybody kind of knew who had what car in the community, and they knew what cars they drove. Mm-hmm. And if their car ever came in, it wasn't long till the word got out that they were there. So then everybody kind of shut down and hid and didn't do anything till they found out where they were headed and what they were going to do.
Were you able to transport it anywhere? And how did you use, what type of vehicles would you use to transport it? Because, you know, that's what we've always heard, that moonshiners, the first real transportation were the kind of like the NASCAR cars. They had the big engines, and if somebody got after them, it was you had to run for your life.
Well, over in the eastern part of the state, they did that. But over here, of course, they had the old cars that would run. But they liked the bigger cars, the old Plymouths and the Dodges and the DeSotos. And you could take the back seat out of them, and you had as much space as you did in a long wheelbase pickup truck. And you could put 75 to 100 gallons in that, and it was more of finesse to ease through and not speed or not cause any problem and kind of run under the radar.
So you actually had a delivery system, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't all just stop and go. I mean, you had certain people that you would deliver to, and I'm sure that they were very special and very close, too.
Well, most of those guys, it's like we were talking the other day, Mr. Taylor, that we talked about. You know, he had a distribution system that was pretty elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a few of us that catered to him. And there was other ones that did the same thing. And he always come with a Cadillac. So he must have been doing a little better than most of us.
I bet you've had quite a few characters that y'all have known in that business.
Oh, yes, sir.
And they would be unique. You know, that's one thing that you guys need to do is write a book about that. And it wouldn't be anything. I mean, we're talking about history and something that's important. And to be perfectly honest with you, it's been extremely important to Cannon County because it's been a way of life and in a way for people to have an income that, I mean, if anybody's ever been to some of these areas out there, it'd be hard to grow many crops, but you actually have some crops growing on your place right now.
Yes, sir. And it's funny you mentioned the book. I suppose we should tell folks that the tour you went on a couple of weeks ago was to Short Mountain Distillery.
Right.
Which is where Jimmy and I are currently employed, and we are getting ready to open the doors up in March of 2012, where it'll be open to the public. We'll have product out by that time. We're going to start getting in production here in the next month or so. We were just last week finished the last of our permits through the state.
So they're all done?
They are all done. The federal and state permits are done. We have an inspection that they're going to come out and do in January before we fire up all the machinery and get the equipment moving. But we feel like that'll be a pretty easy thing for us to get through. So, yes, the tour that you went on was
very impressive.
Was a kind of a sneak peek behind the scenes tour that you guys got to go on. We were super happy to have you guys out for that.
Oh, it was fun.
And in the part of what we're also going to do between now and March when we open to the public is we're working on a cocktail recipe book. We feel like it's important because a lot of people in the bigger cities and other parts of the country and other parts of the world aren't real sure what to do with a white whiskey or a moonshine, per se, but we feel like it is an excellent mixer type of drink, used a lot of the same way that maybe a vodka or a gin is, little cocktail recipes that we're putting together, some that are more of the traditional Cannon County recipes that the locals have found through the years, and then we're finding some that are a little more innovative from that, along with some tinctures and some cough medicines. And also, is in addition to that, we're including stories, just like what you were just talking about, some of the characters of the area, some of the old traditions from that area. A lot of the questions you're asking us, we're going to try to explain through that book and then get that out to the various bartenders and retailers and people that might be trying our product for the first time and give them an idea of how they can use it.
That's pretty interesting. And as far as you're talking about recipes, is moonshine used in cooking if someone is trying to process food, fixing supper or whatever? Do you use that for an ingredient that can be maybe sharpen the taste or something like that?
It can. I don't have a lot of experience with cooking with moonshine. I know we've been looking into that and finding some interesting information about it. I know there's a good friend of mine, a lady named Miss Prater, that lives up there in the Cannon County area, and she's talked to me a lot about her cough medicines and her cough syrups that she used to make up, and she's just the sweetest lady you've ever seen, and I never would have imagined that she would approve of us when we started the idea of starting the distillery up there. And she took me to the side one day when I saw her, and I thought she was going to fuss at me, but she said she wanted to make sure she got a little bit of that because she made the best cough syrup you've ever seen. So we're going to make sure that we get her recipe and include it.
Sounds like the two little ladies that were on the Andy Griffith show, that they found out that they were the ones that were actually making the moonshine and having everybody else arrested.
Yep, it was only for special occasions.
Yeah, it was only for special occasions, 365 days out of the year.
That's right. National Potato Day, I believe, is one
of them. Yeah, and I know that you're going to – now, March is your – day to start having people come in.
Yes, sir.
When is your day to start processing it and making sure that you're going to have it ready for shipment?
Well, that'll be in the month of January after our inspection is complete from the state.
So the distillery are already being processed and operational by March when people start going in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's we're gonna give ourselves plenty of time to make sure that we have the recipe the way that we want it, to make sure that it's a product that we're going to be proud of. Our first product will be something called Short Mountain Shine, and it is going to be just what we were talking about here. It's a traditional Cannon County moonshine recipe that we're using, and it is going to be released hopefully around the time that we do our grand opening. We're not going to commit to that because we want to make sure that we've got something that, you know, that the people are going to really enjoy and come back for. That is tentatively the date that we've got set for that.
Now, where will your outlets be? Where will you be shipping to once you get started?
Well, you know, in the state of Tennessee, there's a three-tier system. So it comes from the manufacturer, which will be us, to a distributor, and then from the distributor it goes to the retailers. We've been talking with various distributors. We have secured an East Tennessee distributor who is going to market our product in that area. We're still in the process of looking and finding the distributor that'll be right for us. And they'll basically just come to the facility, pick it up, take it out, and put it in the retail stores from that point.
Will you be competing with other liquor distributors across the country? Are you looking at making this a nationwide thing, or is it going to be a fairly regional process to start with?
Well, we're going to look at it from the standpoint of it growing.
Right.
You know, a slow growth process we feel like will be good for us because, you know, we're still learning a lot of the ins and outs of it. We're only the sixth distillery in the state of Tennessee, so we don't have a whole lot of examples of distilleries our size. So we're going to start off small and pretty much just be in the state of Tennessee. And as we see our production grow and our sales grow, then we're looking to move nationwide and eventually worldwide with the product.
You have a decided advantage to start with is because you don't have to go through the aging process, which you have a lot of your process still sitting there for a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, 10 years for some of them, whatever the process is. Does that give you a chance to get into the business and let people see what your product is and compare it with others? And maybe even expand out to other areas?
Well, what our intention has been all along is to go from the original product, the Short Mountain Shine, move on to a Tennessee whiskey and a single barrel bourbon that we're going to produce. Now, we'll take some of the product that we're producing initially, put it in barrels, and start it through the aging process. And when that time comes, then we'll be able to release those products as well. So to answer your question, I'm not sure whether that gives us an advantage or not, but we feel like it's certainly an advantage to be able to get some product out as quickly as we can.
So it's possible you may be competing with South Tennessee over there around the Moore County area, right?
Well, I don't know. It would probably be sometime in the future before we'll be quite up to that, but we're willing to go at it with them as well. Yes, sir.
Since I was thinking of that, I got to thinking, you know, it's such a beautiful area where you are, and it's really not that hard to get to. I mean, it really is. It's beautiful back up in those hollows and in the mountains. And you were talking about the water. We're pretty close to the start of the Stones River right around through there somewhere, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
Before it travels anywhere. I mean, it starts right there. So that makes your product fairly pure.
Yes, sir. And it's also kind of ties in with another part of what we're wanting to do, and that's be good stewards of the land. You know, we've got 350 acres up there. Billy Kaufman owns the farm where our facility will be. He's our president and CEO. What we've wanted to do from the beginning is make sure that we use sustainable practices on that farm. And with us being at that elevation and with it being such a water source for the surrounding area, we feel like it's important to make sure that that stays pure as it leaves our farm. So we're very careful about that. We are about to receive our USDA certification there for the farm, and the crops that we grow there will be able to be used in our product.
Do you drink the water straight out of the out of the well there?
Oh, sure. I grew up drinking from a spring and drinking from wells, so I'd rather drink that than city water any day.
We'll get into the water thing in just a minute. Just want to let people know that part of this show is brought to you by At Home Care, and they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you would like to pull them up on the internet, it's www.athomecaretennessee.com. And if you're having trouble taking care of the normal chores at home, and you feel like that you're getting close to maybe having to move or have somebody take care of you, give them a call, because 24/7 they will come into your house, make sure that you're taken care of, all the normal duties that you have been taken care of and no longer can, they will do that for you, and many more things. They just want you to have a quality of life that you're used to and you deserve after all these years. And give them a call. It's 713-4639.
This is Steve Grimsley with Zippy Shell. Are you looking for storage? Perhaps you're preparing your home for sale, downsizing, or just in need of some extra space. Well, then you should give us a call. We offer convenient, affordable storage solutions right here in Rutherford County. We deliver a storage container to you, you pack it, and we'll pick it up and store your goods in our secure facility. We are locally owned and operated. To check out our grand opening specials, give us a call at 216-7879 or visit us at zippyshell.com. Save time, save money, save everything.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Friday, November the 4th, and Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank. The Angel's Closet Sale going on today and tomorrow over at Heaven Sent Children. Gently used children's clothing, toys, and accessories. And it all benefits this international adoption service. The Angel's Closet Sale today and tomorrow, and Heaven Sent Children is located at 307 North Walnut Street. The First Friday Star Party is tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 at MTSU's Weiser Patton Science Hall. That's in room 102. The musical Annie continues tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. There's also a Sunday matinee at 2. And in neighboring Woodbury, another Annie. Irving Berlin's Annie, Get Your Gun, with such classic songs as There's No Business Like Show Business, and Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better. Annie, Get Your Gun, tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Art Center of Cannon County, and a Sunday matinee at 2. Remember, now's the time to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade. The entry form and all the regulations are on the WGNS website. Look across the blue bar on the top and click on Parade. And by the way, the parade is Sunday afternoon, December 11th. And be sure to remember, this is the weekend we fall back to regular time. When you go to bed tomorrow night, change your clock to read 1 hour earlier. That's right, if you go to bed at 10 o'clock tomorrow night, change your clock to read 9 o'clock. We're in fall, so you have to fall back. This is the weekend we change back to regular time. Get those Good Neighbor events to us at least 2 weeks before they occur. WGNS Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon. Reach a high in the low 60s. Tonight, mainly clear, low of 38. Sunny on Saturday, high of 65. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 55.
It's turkey time, and Kirk and Birch is the borough's turkey expert. Deep fried or hickory smoked, Kirk and Birch is who you call. We'll make you the hero on Thanksgiving. Reserve yours today. Kirk and Birch, 893-3663.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
Today's guests, John Whittemore and Jim Simpson.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you?
And you're listening to John Blankenship and Friends, and we're talking about Avon Lane, Ken and Sarah Frizzell, and Billy Yearwood. And the guys here on my right, they know where the Readable Mill is. And I guarantee you, it's one of the best places in the world you can go and have breakfast and meet a lot of people, establish new friendships, old friendships, and just enjoy the area. It kind of reminds me of where I went when we did your tour. John and Jim, it is just absolutely a gorgeous setting, and the Stones River runs right around the mill. It'll be 200 years old next year, and Tom Blankenship did a really great job restoring the old mill, and it's one of the few working mills still in the United States, and we're very fortunate. It's been great for both Cannon County and Rutherford County. So take about a 15-minute drive down John Bragg Highway from Murfreesboro, and you'll see the sign, turn left, go about 2 miles, and you'll be in a place that is just absolutely full of all types of historical things that are there, and you can be part of it. Let's see now. Dan Whittle is sitting in the background. He's our peanut gallery today, and he wanted me to ask you guys about dealing with the merchants where you got a lot of your stuff. We're talking about sugar and things like that. How was that? And, they had to really almost hold your life in their hands, because they had to be very quiet because they knew exactly when you got all that sugar or whatever where it was going to go.
That's true. Most of those guys, though, they would charge you probably a dollar more on 100 than what the sugar normally costs.
Oh, really?
So they were making a pretty good little hunk of change on that end of the game, too.
So they were actually making a profit off of it also.
Right, right. And there's another fellow that run a mill there, and he did all the grinding of the cornmeal and stuff, and then everybody went to him to get that because he wouldn't say anything.
Well, you know, back then, the revenuers, that's what they were looking for, is the ingredients and where you were getting all of it. I mean, just like, you know, you got certain illegal drugs right now, that a lot of the stuff came from the drugstores and things like that. So they've had to do other things to make sure that that doesn't happen anymore. But if you knew that you had a place like that, that you knew that that's where they were going to go, you had to have a very strong bond with the merchants at that time. But in other ways, what you just said kind of makes it a little bit different game, because they're actually involved in it too, so they can be charged with aiding and abetting what you were doing, since they were giving you that extra charge.
That's right. But, of course, you know, back then, every penny counted, and as long as everybody was getting a penny, nobody didn't want to say anything about it.
Now, during the times, all right, we're going through difficult times right now, and we're talking about economically. Say, during the Depression time in the 30s, and I'm sure you guys have heard stories, was that a hard time for people to be making moonshine?
Sure.
Or was it? It was?
Yes. You couldn't buy the sugar. You didn't have the money to buy it. So what they'd do, they'd grow the sugar cane, and they'd make molasses. And they'd lay that molasses out in the air right there and let it turn to sugar, then they'd sweeten their barrels in with the molasses.
Now, how did that work? Did it make the moonshine taste different, and how did that
work?
Well,
I'm sure it would, because, you know, the brown sugar tastes different from the white sugar. Yeah. So I've never drank any of it, and I've never made any of it with that, but I've heard a lot of the older people tell about that's how they would have to do it, especially during the war.
Yeah.
When everybody had to ration those stamps, and you know what, you just got enough to get by on, and there was no extra sugar or anything, so a lot of the people did it then.
Now, when moonshine was at its height around here, when was the last time that you guys can remember that there was actual moonshining going on in volumes in Short Mountain?
Probably the late 60s, maybe the early 70s.
Oh, really?
Somewhere in that area there.
Uh-huh. What was the major competition for moonshine back then? Because I know that the period that we're talking about, marijuana started becoming prevalent.
That was probably what started the downfall of the moonshine. When Vietnam War, when the soldiers started coming back, and they got introduced to marijuana there, and they brought it back here, and they introduced all the younger people, and they just kind of got away from the alcohol and started with the marijuana.
It was a lot easier to do, too. I mean, it's a lot of work to run a still, so...
Especially the old method there, when you had to dip everything out with a bucket, and you had to dip all the water into the barrel, and then you had to dip it all back out into the still, and then when you get it run, then you'd have to dip it all back out again. So there's quite a bit of physical work to it at that time.
How long does it take you just to start, when you start and you start processing the moonshine, how long does it take before you finally get it all in jugs?
Oh, you're talking about from the time you start cooking
from
the time you start fermenting your barrels?
The time you start cooking it.
Oh, 5 to 6 to 8 hours, depending on how big an outfit you're trying to run. One barrel, which would be 50 gallon, you probably do it in 4 to 5 hours.
So, once the 70s came, and of course, did you ever have anybody come up in the Short Mountain that you can remember? Were there any large raids up there in that area during the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and maybe even 50s?
The alcohol force was never too big. You couldn't ever carry a big group of people through the woods because they could hear them coming like a herd of cattle, you know. And they were kind of trying to be stealth about it. They tried to be real.
But what could you do if they did come up in there?
Run.
So you'd leave all your goodies behind, right?
Yeah. That's a... Better them get everything than get you. You could go then for probably less than $100. You could get another outfit built back, and you could start back.
So how much money would you lose in one raid if you had just had one steel sitting there? Because I know a lot of people had multiple steels, if I remember right.
Oh, probably $150, $200 for the steel, and probably another $50 to $100 for your materials.
How much could you get for a gallon of whiskey?
Back at that time, $3 to $5, depending on where you sold it at. Nashville, it brought a little bit more.
Yeah.
If you sold it local, it didn't bring hardly as much.
What would be the profit margin over and above your expenses making moonshine at that time?
Well, at that time, probably if you made $1 to $2 a gallon, you was doing pretty good.
Well, that's pretty good. Good profit margin there.
Well, there was no work. There's no way to make a living doing anything else. So, you know, if you can make $30, $40 a week, you was living pretty decent.
Now, what did you do with your money? Because I have heard stories, but how do you explain, say, if you're making a lot of money during 1 month period, and how do you explain that? Or does it,
well,
even notice it, in Cannon County?
Well, didn't ever blow a lot of money because you didn't have a lot. Most of the people that did that had big families, and it took just about everything they could generate to keep their family going and keep everybody from starving.
So it's basically what you're doing, just making a living.
Right, right.
That's right. And that's another thing that people don't understand. They think that you're going to get rich doing that kind of stuff, and it was strictly survival. And I worked for several years. I'm still in contact with a few of the ladies through the White Oak Timber Cooperative. You know, in Cannon County, the other big tradition besides moonshining is the basket making. The Art Center of Cannon County has a nice display down there in their museum about that. I was working with a lot of those ladies trying to get them timber after they had gotten to the point where they couldn't get it themselves. Their husbands had passed away, and we wanted to help preserve that tradition, just like we're now trying to preserve this tradition. And one of the sweetest ladies I ever worked with, and I loved all these ladies, but she had the greatest quote for me one day when she and I were just talking about baskets, and then she was saying something about her husband couldn't get her wood back. She was talking about back in the old days, and she said, because he's back there working with his still. Mm-hmm. And this was a very religious, very respectable lady, and I said, oh, well, you didn't mind that he was making moonshine back there and whiskey? And she looked at me, patted me on the hand, and she said, honey, if it hadn't been for baskets and whiskey, we'd have starved to death back in those days. So, no, I didn't mind.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people don't really understand. It was a way of life when it was brought over here, and it continued to be a way of life because there really wasn't any industry in those areas. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. And most of the people would probably had if they had gotten a good job around there, they would have been working less and making a whole lot more money than they were having to deal with that. But, you know, that's the way the thing's happening. But now we're in a new age. Now you can actually distill it and have a business of your own, going through all the legal processes that you have to go through.
That's right.
And you're going to get started in March. Now, I saw a vat that you had out there when we first went in. How much are you going to have to grow to become what you feel like successful in the business? How much are you going to have to put out? How much product are you?
Well, Truman, I'd love to be able to answer that for you, but it would be a guess on my part right now. As you know, I handle more things along the lines of the tours and the hospitality. I help out with a lot of things on the farm. Our distiller is a gentleman by the name of Josh Smotherman, and he is available there at the distillery for folks to give us a call there or to send him an email, and he can answer those questions for you. I know we've got some ideas as far as that's concerned, and I know that we're looking to move to a larger facility because the building that we're in right now just doesn't have the capacity to hold all the equipment you would need. But again, I would strictly be making a guess, and I'm thinking that the sky's the limit on my part, you know, as big as we want to get.
Now, if you move to a different place or a different building, would it still be on that property?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Out in the front from where the steelhouse number one is that you were at, it would be that front field out there that kind of borders the highway.
Now, if a person's looking to take a tour out there, what are they looking at and what's going to be involved in the tour?
Okay. Well, we're going to have two basic tours. The first is the one that you went on. Well, actually, you guys got to do a little bit of both, which was a great thing to have you guys out there for us to kind of
really
get a practice run in. Like you were talking about before, we've got the wagon that we've got the mules that'll pull that for us.
Jim's mules?
That's Jimmy's mules there, yes, sir, and he's the wagon master, because you wouldn't want me guiding the mules across the field there. Might get everybody in trouble, but we're going to use that tour primarily to go out and see the crops that we've got and the animals that we're using on the farm and talk a little bit about how all that ties together. A lot of people don't realize that all of those things work together, because in most situations that's not the case. Their grain is imported from out of state, or all the other ingredients are brought in, but we're going to do our best to have as much of it as we can from right there on the farm, and if not right there on the farm, from somebody local, because there's plenty of farmers around there who can grow anything we need. So that tour will be primarily focusing on agriculture. It'll last, 20, 25 minutes is how long the ride lasts. And then, of course, you'll get to see the still house and see our Shiner Shack, which we're real proud of. And then the other tour, which is going to be more for, I guess, bigger groups and on days when maybe the weather's not so nice that we can't get the wagon up and going, we're going to have a Cave Spring Trail. And that will be a 10-minute walk, 15 minutes after I get through talking. And we'll go back along a trail through the woods back to the mouth of a cave spring that's coming out of the side of the hill right there behind the still house. And I think that one's neat because it does give you that perspective of why this part of the world was ideally suited for those kind of practices, because you can see, you saw it yourself, you've got all the clean water you need running right there coming out of the side of the mountain, plenty of trees, plenty of woods around you, and if you're a pretty smart guy and can keep your mouth shut, you can do whatever you wanted to back there.
Now, how many people is it going to take to fire that up, get it started?
to get the distillery itself going. Well, right now, what we have on our team is, as I mentioned before, Billy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. He is the owner, president, and CEO. We have a gentleman by the name of Christian Grantham, who is our COO. He's handling all the technicalities that we're having to go through. We couldn't be where we are right now without him. Mm-hmm. He's more or less overseeing all aspects of the operation. Then Josh Smotherman is going to be our head of production and our distiller, one of our distillers. And then, of course, we've got Jimmy Simpson here, who is going to be one of our distillers in the Shiner Shack, mm-hmm. along with Ricky Estes and Ronald Lawson, who will all be working together.
Ricky Estes was one interesting fellow.
He is that.
To say the least.
I'd love to have him on, because I tell you what, he told me more about moonshining than I ever dreamed. Of course, he goes all the way back to 6 or 7 generations of moonshining. And it's so interesting, because he's really an expert on that. And I know you are too. But just sitting there and listening to his stories is just so fascinating. Are you going to have him out there explaining the distillery and all that? And actually, I actually got to see one of your stills that was, I don't know how old that still was, but it's been around a long time.
Oh, it's probably been around 50 years or so.
And you still got it fixed up. It looks like you could almost just fire it up there and make a few barrels in its own.
Yes, sir. We're going to do some modifications on that one and have it there, perhaps operational, maybe even just as a display that we'll have in the future. But yes, sir, Ricky's going to be there. We'll try to have Ronald out there every weekend. The tours will be primarily taking place on Fridays and Saturdays. Mm-hmm. The rest of the week we'll be using for other operations, and we'll see. If we get so many people coming out, then we may move it into some other days of the week. But yes, we've got the front porch out there with those beautiful rocking chairs and in the beautiful setting that we have, and we're going to make those guys available to tell people a little bit of living history right there on the spot. You know, those guys know all the old stories, they know all the old families and all the old traditions, and we hope that that's something that we can share with folks that come in to visit with us. Really important to us.
Are you going to have Bobby Hayes come out, Jim?
I'm sure she will be there. If she's not, I'm going to be mad.
I'd like to know when she's out there. I'd like to go out there and see her.
When she comes, I'll be sure and let you know.
I appreciate it. Okay, we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard.
Hello, Truman.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I just wonder if your pastor's listening to this show.
I don't know, but I bet he is, because he's from Cannon County.
Well, I wanted to... I lost my daddy at 37 years old because of bootlegged whiskey. I was a little girl, 11 years old. I've seen men... that was so addicted, they'd come in to get a drink and they couldn't get the glass to their mouth. But I have this I'd like to quote this for you. Is the drunkard was there and the gambler, with the people who sold them the drink, with the people who gave them the license, together in hell they did sink. And you need to think about that. But just because it's legal doesn't make it right.
Yes, ma'am.
And it will have to be given account for when you stand before God.
Yes, ma'am.
I just had to get that in, because you don't know the hurt. You just don't know.
Yes, ma'am. I have seen it. Yes, ma'am. I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay, want to let you know that part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb's can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Stop by Southeastern Tire Service before you head off for your winter travels this year. We're a full-service repair facility, so we can get your car in tip-top condition before you head out. Also, from October 31st until November 28th, when you buy four Michelin tires, you'll get a $70 prepaid MasterCard through mail-in rebate. That's at Southeastern Tire Service on Broad Street across from Advance Auto. Southeastern Tire Service, serving Murfreesboro and Rutherford County since 1950. Visit southeasterntireservice.net.
Jay Cash, the auctioneer and real estate broker, presents an absolute estate auction this Saturday, 10 a.m., Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Selling will be an all-brick, three-bedroom, two-bath home located within walking distance of Middle Tennessee State University. Over 2,000 square feet, this home is move-in ready and a great investment opportunity. Also selling will be many quality tools, furniture, and antiques. An absolute estate auction this Saturday, 10 a.m., Murfreesboro. Visit jcash.com for details. Auction being conducted by Jay Cash, the auctioneer and real estate broker, and Bob Parks Auction Firm 3984.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back with us, and I believe we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard.
Howdy, Truman. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Doing great. I had a question. I was just going to ask the boys up there, do they have any descendants from Mr. Cap Young or Mr. L.B. Parker or some of the old-timey moonshiners up there? Are they going to be involved in the steal with them?
No, sir, not that I know of. I'm pretty sure Mr. Cap Young, the only thing he has is some grandsons, and I don't think that either one of them ever know anything about it.
Back in my young days, they were pretty popular folks.
Yes, sir. Mr. Cap Young was probably about as famous as anybody in that country for a long time.
Yes, sir, and I just want to say that, you know, moonshiners and bootleggers, they were the most accommodating people that there was anywhere around in the county. They'd not do anything for you that they could.
And I'm sure they were very popular, too.
Yes, sir. They sure were.
Yes, sir.
Well, I just wondered, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. All right, we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. I got a comment and a very important question. I've been listening about 40 minutes, and I understand the woman's pain that called in.
Yes, sir.
It's my understanding back in those days, my daddy did it, there was a wide, wide, wide variety of people who made bad Let It Shine and people who made stuff that was A1 quality good. And I assume these people are going to be A1 quality good. You can't do anything about people who eat too much pizza, much less too much of anything. I've been listening 40 minutes, and I haven't heard the name of the product. I'd like to hear the name of the product again, what proof it is. And I'm a person who finds it very hard to drink. I have to cover it up with orange juice or something like that. Could they have some suggestions on what they can mix this with? Because I just ain't going to be able to take a straight shot of it. And that would help me. The name of the product, what proof it's going to be, they could suggest when they put it out, a couple of three mixed drinks for people like me, that'd help me. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I'll answer that question. The first product that will be out is a Short Mountain Shine, and it'll be 105 proof, and it is a clear, unaged white whiskey. Now, I have a few ideas as far as the recipe is concerned, but I know that the few samples that I've had of this product have been extremely tasty, and you'll probably be surprised at how smooth and tasty this is, but I'll let Jimmy tell you some other ideas as far as that goes.
Some people use a hot apple cider, and they mix it with that, and they make kind of a hot toddy with it, and some people mix it with orange juice, and just about any kind of cola drink that you wanted to mix with it would mix, because it's pretty neutral.
Sundrop goes pretty good, doesn't it?
I've heard that.
All righty. Now, tell us again how they get over to your place, John, the ones that are going to be coming in and doing the tour, and maybe just a little bit kind of open to what you're going to have over there as far as what they're going to be looking at How do you get over to your where your business is going to be?
Yes, sir. Well, I can tell you that coming from Murfreesboro, you will take Highway 70S. That follow takes you all the way up into the other side of Cannon County, where you'll meet up with Highway 146, which will then take you over towards Smithville. You follow that route out, I guess it's about 6, maybe 7 miles. You'll pass the Short Mountain Market, and then we'll have signs. We don't currently have any signs up because we're not open to the public, but we have those in the works. You'll see signs. We're on the right-hand side of the road, and you'll be able to find us there. What you could also do is go to shortmountaindistillery.com. That's shortmountaindistillery.com. We'll have maps available there and any other kind of information that you might want as far as what's going on, our progress, and that sort of thing. It's also a way to reach us. And you can also follow us on Facebook at Short Mountain Distillery.
Now, over, and we're talking about Moore County, where Jack Daniels is, they have other businesses cropped up around their particular business. As you know, they had Ms. Bobo's, which was a huge inn where people would come in and bed and breakfast and things like that. Are you anticipating any offshoots from your business over there in that area?
Well, we certainly hope so. That was one of the things that we talked about when we were gathering signatures before we went on the referendum about this time last year, was that we were hoping to build business, not only generate some tax for the area, but also to help the businesses that are already there and hopefully bring in some that weren't. Now, I know you were talking about the Reedyville Mill and Mr. Brady there. We've been talking with him. We've also been talking with Donald and some of the folks at the Art Center about setting up a tour that, say, comes from Murfreesboro or Nashville, where they can visit a few of those spots. There's been a bed and breakfast recently open up on College Street there in Woodbury. I don't think it's related to us, but certainly it's a beautiful place that we've checked out and think is going to be a super destination for folks. So, yes, that's what we're hoping for, is that we can build that up and make it a destination for folks who want to come in and see a little bit of, you know, the traditional way of life in Tennessee.
Well, you know, the lady that called in had some concerns, but when you start a business like you have, you have to have the people in the neighborhood buy on to it.
Yes, sir.
And you have to get all the permits, and you have to get the okays by the county court clerk, county court, and all those things. Did you have any problems when you started addressing your neighbors and people like that? Did you have any people that felt like that would be a negative thing for Cannon County?
Very, very few. I had anticipated, by being from that area, I knew what I felt like was a little bit of the attitude of folks there. But we were not surprised, I wouldn't say, but we were very pleased to find that the majority of the people there were very supportive of us and have continued to be so. And we had, of course, a few people that mentioned that they had a problem with it, and we were very nice about that. Thank you very much, and have a nice day. And again, we're here to help support the community and to help build the community. We're not here to try to hurt anyone.
Well, it's been a joy to have you guys on. You've been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
And I knew any relatives of Gary Simpson had to be top-notch people. And I'm still planning on going to see him in Shevel again and eat at his restaurant downtown. And I really appreciate you guys. And I really wish you good luck.
Well, thank you, Truman. We sure appreciate you having us on today.
Yes, sir. We sure do. Thank you, Truman.
Thank you. And we will see you... Actually, I will see you in a little over a week, but the show will still continue to be on, and it'll be back on Monday at 2:00. Thank you.